This podcast is brought to you by Zeno Mueller, three-time Olympian and gold medalist. Imagine a 20-second 2K PR by the end of this season, or even sooner. Elite rowing coach by Zeno Mueller is a competitive advantage. The ERG score is the SAT of rowing, so find out what Zeno Mueller can do for you. Make sure to use coupon 4STARS, F-O-R-S-T-A-R-S, for $200 off on any program he has on his website. Zeno is an Olympian and graduate from Brown University, coached by the legendary Steve Gladstone. He'll get you right, he'll get your 2K down, and you'll be a better athlete after his training. So make sure you tune in with Zeno and get some coaching at eliterowingcoach.com.
Sometimes it needs some stumbling before you really can run.
On tonight's program, ladies and gentlemen, we have something that's going to make you sick.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the 4STARS podcast. We are here today with the legendary Yosi. I'm not going to pronounce his last name. Yosi, how do you pronounce your last name for the viewers out there?
Well, you could say Verdonkschot, but you took the right road. You just stick to my first name, which is much easier.
Yeah, we'll stick to that. Yosi and I talked a couple of days ago about coming on here and talking about, you know, rowing and the future of U.S. rowing in particular. He is the chief high performance officer for U.S. Rowing. He was a former Dutch man. You were a Dutch man and had been able to coach two women's lightweight doubles to Olympic gold. There's so much talk about there, and I would love to see more medals this summer in Paris, the U.S. When you first heard about the opportunity to be the, you know, high performance officer, or sorry, the chief high performance officer for U.S. Rowing, what was the thought going there?
I didn't know what the title meant. To put it things straight, I did not apply. People asked me whether I would be interested, and I said, sure, let's have a talk. It was after the Olympics in Tokyo, and I thought it might be a nice opportunity to find a new challenge. And I thought, United States, it's a very interesting environment, so why not see whether it would be something for me? So I had some talks. And in the end, they were pretty happy that I accepted their offer.
Everyone was talking about it, so I think it's, you know, great to have you here. In your eyes, what is the most important thing a rower should be working on to make the national team?
If I would have to say something, it would always be make sure that you find the right balance. Because if you would start and work and have this goal in mind, I want to make the Olympics, I want to become a member of the national team, it's not just 1 week. It always takes time. So if you don't find a balance in your life, if you don't find a way how to combine training with the rest of your life, economically, socially, academically, it will never work. Because if it's not sustainable, it's not about 1 week. In general, it takes a couple of years for somebody to become part of a system, become member of a training group. But then you have to sustain, and you, because it's always something for the longer term. So I would always say the most important thing is to realize yourself, that you don't overreach and that you don't think too much that you have to crush the numbers tomorrow, but that you put yourself in a situation where you're able to train over a longer span of time.
Right. How long should a rower be in the national team for?
Well, you don't need to be so long in the national team if you want to have the experience. But if you want to win medals, probably it'll take 4 to 8 years to be on the podium and to be on a real podium, Olympic podium. Because first of all, Olympics is just every 4 years, and it's obvious that everybody thinks, okay, so now's my chance. Now I take a red shirt. Now I take 1 year off, and I'll do everything. But if there's no basis, it probably, your chances won't be that big. And if you would make it, probably your team wouldn't be that great. So I do think that it's a big ask, but you should consider, if you really want to achieve the highest, just look at the average age of most people on the podium. They'll be all like 28 or older. And if you look at that age, when you are 22 and when you're graduating this year, it might be a great dream to go to Paris, but your dream should be about maybe making Paris and be prepared for LA, because that would be a good trajectory if you would look at it. Peaking at an age of 27, 28 is what physically in most cases happen. And then it also helps you to plan and set up a life beyond rowing, because if you would focus after graduation, just so I'm going to do nothing else, I'm going to train, I'm going to put all my time in it, probably you're not building the rest of your life and it will not be sustainable. So you'll drop out the first time you've got a bad result. And that's unfortunate, because sometimes it needs some stumbling before you really can run.
There are times where you find out that not everything in life's going to be 100% fluid. There's going to be bumps along the way. I like that a lot. And you mentioned LA 2028, you know, it's going to be 1500 meter. First reaction to that?
Who cares? I mean, when we arrive there, that's what we have to do. And before that, every step in the qualification is a 2K race. So I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on how to select which people to involve, etc. Because first of all, you have to qualify, and that's over 2,000 meters. And then when we get to LA, it's 1,500. Yeah. Okay. So 1,500 meter race in a woman's single probably takes the same time as a 2K for a man in the eight. So it's all a matter of perspective. We don't have very specific different preparations for the women's single or the men's eight. So I don't see it as a very interesting aspect right now. It's something down the line in 4 years and a couple of months from now, it becomes interesting. For now, it's not.
Well, don't you think that the training program for a 1500 meters is a bit different than a 2K?
So what I said is that the women's race is, so a women's single takes about 7.5 minutes and a men's eight takes about 5.5 minutes. So do we train very differently for those events? Question? Probably not. Yeah. And in the end, in the final preparation, in the specific preparation, there might be a difference. But if you look at comparable races, so if you look at swimming, there's a huge difference between those people that do a 100 or 50 meter and a 200 and the ones that do a 800 or 1500 meter. But they always do the 800 and the 1500. If you look at track and field, people do the 800 and the 1500. It's more or less the same type of people. And that's a range from, let's say, 4 minutes to 8 minutes, something like that. There's not a huge difference, except when you get to 1K or below. Formerly, women's races were over a distance of 1,000 meters. And so the specific type of people that were doing those races was different from the people that were doing the 2Ks. But for instance, in para rowing, they also switched from 1K to 2K not too long ago. But there's no difference in the people that are performing. Mm. Just because of the fact that you're above the 2 minute limit. So it's 4 minutes and beyond. So then more or less, the physiology will not be so different.
Why isn't there a junior speed order, something in the winter or fall to throw out like a championship for the fall season or something like that?
I think your question was very valid. Why isn't there a youth speed order or a fall event? The answer is probably obvious, because it's very expensive and the US is a huge country. But I do think it makes sense to focus on individual development as early as possible. And so one of the things that I try to establish is have one pathway, one learning line from working backwards from the Olympic level, looking at sub-elite, intermediate level, looking at under 23, looking at under 19. And what I want is a clear line, which means that we have to create more touching points with the athletes and us. So a touching point can be a camp. So expanding the opportunities for athletes like under 19 winter camp, like under 23 winter camp, just to focus on individuals, not just rowing and aid, but focus on how to make an individual better. And I think that's key to having success on the longer term. So to me, it's very important. So the change I brought was that now under 19, under 23 is part of my program. I'm responsible for content and for pathway. And Brad Gorman is the new person who is now leading our pathways program. And one of the things we are trying to do is be more creative and try to find ways to do just what you said, create winter camps, but also look at how we can get a better insight in how people are developing individually. So how you are growing, not so much how your brain is growing, because I don't think I can influence that very much. But the only thing that is important to me is how physically a person can grow and how we can monitor that. And on the longer term, how we can make sure that the best people will get the best chances.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important to give, you know, like, not a lot of chances to somebody, but just give them enough to just say, okay, you've had a chance, you know. Which part of the rowing stroke is the most important that needs to be trained first?
Rowing is a cyclic movement. So if you look at what you need to train first, I wouldn't look so much for a part of the stroke. I would look at feeling for the water. I understand that you've been a coxswain. It's not about moving water. It's about moving a boat. So if you are sitting in a boat, you have to understand what is your impact on the boat and the boat speed, which is not related to just powering your way through it, but just to feel that what you pick up on your blade, that you can sustain and that you can follow through. So looking at it from my perspective, I would say that the first and most important development for an individual athlete would be his feeling for the water. It's the same as with swimming. You have to feel how you are efficient, because what you are doing is you are displacing a boat. You're not shoving the water away. You use the water to push yourself forward. Or backwards, if you want to talk about rowing. So having a good understanding of your impact on the boat, your impact on the balance, and your impact on the speed is important. So you should feel, and that's difficult, eh? Because we want to learn something and then we want to teach, and teaching is this brain. But basically, all that rowing that is somewhere in the back of your it's your old and ancient instinct. It's about feeling, and that is difficult to teach. You can only learn that by application.
Right. I mean, muscle memory is so important. I was coaching juniors this fall, and I'm trying to teach them when they're feathering, you know, they can't just take their whole, you know, hand, like claw it, and then, you know, slam it down, and their entire wrists are vertical. You have to feather it, rolling it with your fingertips. And it's hard for them to understand that. So I'm saying it's going to take time. You're not going to get it right now, you know?
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
But
and that again is about feeling confident in the boat. If you talk about rolling, if and you give the example of clawing it, then you've got a lot of tension and all your muscles are tense. But basically, rolling it would give it a little shove, your fingers release, and you catch it back. That's also feeling confident in the boat, because if you are sitting in a boat and your only concern would be not flipping over, then you will sit like this with your shoulders tensed and with every muscle in your body tensed. So, and that's why just feeling confident in a boat and having experience in small boats basically is very, very important. And it's hard in the bigger American programs where you've got big schools and big numbers of people, but you know, there's always opportunity. It's just about creativity. You can always find an hour where you could practice yourself in a single or in a pair or in a rowing tank, because there's always a way to find how to do it. It's not that you just have to follow what your coach is telling you. You're in the end, the main concern for yourself is you. And if you look at everybody around you, the main concern is probably the team, but not specifically you. So if you have to take care of yourself in general, that's the best approach.
100%. Yeah, I agree with you. What is the most important aspect of training for a junior rower to improve the ERG score?
Okay, good question. You want to improve your ERG score. One answer could be ERG a lot, but I've got a question. So you've got this Mondo Duplantis, world record holder in pole vaulting. What do you think is the most important of his practice?
Repetition.
You think repetition. So he jumps over 6 meters and 20 centimeters. Do you think that he does that every day?
No. What I'm saying is not doing that every day. I'm saying he's he's continuing on with his training. He's not giving up. He's keep on going at it. He's disciplined is what I'm trying to say.
Good. So discipline is important, but also look at what brings together your ERG score. It's a combination of your sprinting capacity or anaerobic capacity and your endurance. So that, which means having a good ERG score comes together by how strong are you and how fit are you. So the strength is one part to train, and you can train that by strength training, but specifically for juniors, I would say rowing often is about biological age and not so much about real age. I mean, somebody who is still young, and for some people puberty comes later, for some people puberty comes earlier, so that has a huge impact on how well your body is able to develop muscle. So sometimes you shouldn't try to do the impossible, but you should work on the possible. So if the possible is endurance, you can work on your endurance. And endurance is not just rowing long stints, but also doing some cross training. So I would say if you the two parts to develop, one is strength, the other part is endurance. The endurance part can be done in different ways. I think that spending time in the pool, spending time on the track has the same effect on building your endurance. And sometimes it's better because it's not just one repetitive strain. You're doing different ways to achieve the same, which brings me to bringing things together. Is so you're strong and you've got endurance, but you also have to bring those two things together. So as a younger athlete, the most important part would be to make sure that your core strength is optimal, because that's a part that we can exercise. You must make sure that you protect your body against injury, not so much by not doing exercise, but by training the link between, you know, your strength and your different muscle groups, which sometimes is, you know, around your belly, around your waist, your midsection, that has to be very strong. So that's important. If you want a better ERG score, make sure that you are connected. And to be connected, you need that core strength. That's one part. The other part is your endurance. You can exercise your endurance in many different ways. It shouldn't just be rowing. And then, yeah, your sprinting capacity, you should consider it to be train the extreme. So not have a 2K every day, but train the short distance, train the longer distance, and rely on your body to bring it together once it counts. Because if you want to get faster on the ERG, what you need to do is to train both sides of the medal and linking it together with a strong core, and then you probably will slowly improve. And then patience, because in general, one could improve, let's say, a split second every year, or maybe two split seconds over the years when you're younger. But it's not so important whether you do that in one time. The most important is that you see that there's still a positive line. Every development always goes like a wave. If it goes up and maybe a little bit back and up and maybe a little bit back, but the trend line should be going up. As long as you see a positive trend line, you're doing well. You're training and you have effect. If there's no trend, if it's flat, then I would find a different occupation because it takes too much time to row.
Do you personally identify any athletes for the national team, or is it up to the club coaches in the States?
I would say that for the different age groups, I'm an interested bystander because the numbers are too big. Although sometimes you notice, you know, somebody who performs, but in general, that's in hindsight. The most important thing is, because America is huge, people revert mainly to the obvious, which is, does somebody have a huge ERG score? I would say I'm mostly interested in what's the speed in the boat, and I'm mostly interested in what's the speed in the smaller boat type. So I do look at age group under 19, under 23, whenever there's something in small boats. Yeah. And that's also why at the senior level, we've got those speed orders. So I identify people for the senior level just because of the speed orders. And now we get to what you said. Why don't we have this for under 19 and under 23? Yeah. Sure, that would be a very good reason to have that. But we, you know, we are evolving and developing. Might be that's not so visible right now, but on the longer term, I do think that we need to create opportunities for people to excel also in smaller boats, because that gives you the individual stimulus to continue and to try to, you know, to be visible and to participate. Because as soon as you offer opportunity, people will take it. If you don't offer opportunity, it doesn't happen by itself.
I like that a lot. Forget the number of athletes. Just let's say you could, you know, had a handful of rowers on your team that could suit an eight, but you had another way to do it. If you were coaching your own program, a junior level program, a varsity team, not a novice team, a varsity, it could be novice, whatever it is, would you start off the rowers sculling or would you put them in sweep boats?
It depends a little bit on age. There are countries where they don't do sweeping until they are 16, 17 years old. Although I think as long as people stay versatile, as long as they row both sides, it's not really an issue to start off with sweeping. But my preference would be sculling. Just look at the impact that COVID had on even collegiate programs, where they found that, hey, so we did those small boats and suddenly we are faster in the summer. So I would try and find a way to integrate it. Having said that, it's totally obvious that with the big numbers, it's almost impossible to have a program and run it. And I can be an idealist, but you don't have 100 singles. And so if you've got 100 juniors, or if you've got 40 boys and 40 girls in your varsity program, it is hard. However, there must be ways. I always say, yeah, we can all start and shout that it's impossible. But if we would think like that, no change will happen. So be creative. Don't just say that it's not possible, but create some incentivized program for those people that want to do it, and find ways to rotate groups, you know, do periods. I know that your season is very short, but still try to think out of the box. So would I need so many boats for that? I don't think so, as long as I'm creative. But your question was what I would do. I would integrate small boat rowing in the program, and I would make sure that the focus is not just about speed, but is about individual development. Because there's two ways of looking. How can I make my fastest boat faster? One is by training a lot in the fastest boat, or do the same as I said about training program. Work on the extremes, work on the outsides, work on the individual, and then rely on the fact that the total will be better. Which, yeah. And now I know that I'm long on this question, gives one other issue, and that is selection. Because why do you want to spend all that time in the big boat? Because lots of times we are racing, we're switching, we're doing this and that and that. And I say, yeah. Sure, that's a way of selecting, but what you're doing is like you're switching engine parts, but not to look at what an individual does, because you say that you look at what an individual does, but actually you're just looking at the whole, at the boat as a system. And I would say, well, that's just because you don't feel secure enough. If I would do testing on an individual basis and just put the boat together on what I think is the best boat and work on that, probably I've got more time for working with the athletes, and I would spend less time in racing. And maybe the racing is part why people do it. So you also have to fulfill, let's say, people's motivation to do sports. That's challenging yourself, etc. But I would want to emphasize the fact that that also can be seen from an individual point of view. Just look at the individuals, make them better, and then rely on what happens with the whole.
Yeah, we see a lot of rowing coaches who are so focused on winning, right? But it's how do you win? You win by training the individual athlete, like you said. And there's, I think, little, when you're in those big programs, it's hard to, at least people say it is, I haven't been a part of one. They say it's hard to try to train the individual when there's so many people on the team. But I don't know. I feel like there's always a way to do it. And it's important, because when you figure out what's going on, one little problem with someone throwing a stroke can impact the whole entire boat. And sure, you could do it on the water, but if you talk to them after practice, show them video and little things like that, you're going to see improvement, because some people are very visual. One of your friends, Casey Galvanic, I had interviewed him, and it's one of our top episodes. It was over 2 hours long. It was actually longer than 2 hours, but I dialed it down to 2 hours. And Casey was coaching the men's four that this past World Championships. They got a silver medal. Your reaction to that, you know, he's your friend, but also your colleague. Casey's talked about it, I think, with Sean Wolf, about how Sarasota is now an HP place that people can go to Sarasota and train. I think, is it Michelle that's out there?
Michelle, you said? Yeah, Michelle is currently training at Princeton, and she'll move to Sarasota in probably in 10 days or something like that. I see it more like offering opportunities at more locations. So if you look at the setup of US rowing, again, we do not have the training centers that other countries would have. It's not that I can offer everything from boats. So training on the water, training on land, having a strength and conditioning room within this facility, et cetera, et cetera. Having room for PT, having room to relax, have a cook. It's not like that. The best The closest we get is in Princeton, and we are looking at an extension of the training center. And we are speaking with Benderson to have something like a real physical structure at Benderson. But there are more opportunities. In the meanwhile, we try to work together with clubs like CSC, like Green Racing, like Orion, and we try to integrate more or less one way of working, have the same program, do all the things the same. So right now, I see the training centers as kind of a way how to propagate your philosophy. So right now we've got Boston, where the para program is, and where some athletes like Clark Dean, etc., training. We've got Princeton, we've got Sarasota, but you don't want to stay in Sarasota all year round. You can't stay in Princeton all year round, just because of weather, just because of, for instance, the size of a group, and just because of the choices that you make in your life. You have to study or you have to do some other things. So what I try to do is create more hotspots like Sarasota, like Princeton. What my plan is to upgrade the structures there. And then it's just a natural way that people will start moving in those directions. And in the meanwhile, we make sure that we work together with the clubs to make sure that, you know, the best athletes find a good training environment. And so for now, it's not that we can offer an athlete a stipend, a job, a house. So we have to find clever ways of doing that. And in that respect, it's for us essential to work together also with clubs. So yes, we're developing training centers. Yes, Sarasota is very important. Boston is important. Princeton is important. But we also have to develop more spots. And so right now, there's a concentration of athletes in Oakland. There's a concentration of athletes in Philadelphia. There's a concentration of athletes in Saratoga. There's a concentration of athletes in New York, Overpeck, Nyack. We hope that Oklahoma City will become more important again. So yeah, we try to, probably forgot Crosbury. I try to be complete always. Difficult not to be perfect. Anyway, I mentioned everybody. And what we try to do now is cooperation. And what the future should be is try to concentrate our activities at centers like Sarasota and maybe also at the West Coast, because not everybody wants to row in one place. So you need to have more items on your menu.
So we got a couple more questions here about things, and then we'll go into the Q&A. I think it's important to talk about your experience just with the Dutch and seeing how things are different.
If you look at the Netherlands, scale is important because the total surface of the Netherlands is more or less like the state of Maine, which means that you find all rowing activities on a much smaller scale, which means that everybody can come to the National Training Center whenever you want. If I call on Friday, everybody can be there on Saturday morning. And everybody can train together. So first of all, people live much more on a smaller surface, so you can bring them together easier. The second thing is Netherlands is flat, so you can row everywhere, more or less. In every city, you can find a rowing club, and it has access to good training water. It's very difficult in the United States to find good training water. And the climate in the Netherlands is pretty mild, which means that you can row 12 months a year. Maybe a couple of weeks it's difficult, but in general, you can keep on training. So that's a big difference. Another big difference is that if you row in high school, there's no schools. There's just club rowing. So people that row, they row for a club. They do not row for their school, and everything is small ball based. I think that the number of athletes, under 19 athletes that compete in competition in the Netherlands would be more over a year, would be a maximum of about 500. So that's nothing compared to the United States. However, they all row small boats because they don't have a crew. There's no aid. There's not even an event. The only events that are small boats events, and maybe quads for under 15, 16. But in general, that's the only thing. That's how they learn to row. So that's another difference. The system is built up from the club level with under 15, under 16, 17 and 18, learning to row in small boats. Then the next difference is if people go to school, go to university, they go to a university rowing club. There might be 20 decent clubs in the Netherlands that have a program. But they are not connected to the university. They are clubs. It's like ACRA. They are not funded by the university, which means that they are self-sufficient and do what makes sense. They compete in freshman's aids. There's no longer a real freshman's aid competition in the US, and for the Netherlands, it's still a huge source of new athletes coming into the sports and getting into those aids. But there's also no rules. There's so many rules in the US that are kind of a break on how the program functions. Because if you would go to a college to study in the Netherlands, so you roll with a club, there's no NC2A rules. There's no eligibility. If I would think that you are a good junior that goes to a student's club, I can call you for the national program. It's not that somebody is counting how many days somebody is training. There's not somebody counting how many hours you are doing, how many hours the coach is there. So basically, if I look at the system first, the junior system, it's based upon individuals. Then the student system, it's based upon clubs without regulations. And there might be individuals, but there's no rule that when you're a freshman that you have to row in freshman's eight. I can put you in any boat. There's no rules about coach contact, etc., except obviously for the safe sports part. But I mean, for how many hours of training is allowed, supervised training is allowed, etc. So that's the second one. And the third one is the concentration. So then once you escape that level, if you get to the national level, you can be still a member of those clubs. You can be in the middle of your study and you come to the National Training Center. You come to Amsterdam. Everybody comes to Amsterdam. And there's a group of about 50, 60 people training there. And that's the national team. And that's it. And they still study wherever they are. They can continue to study. But that training center, they've got equipment. They've got a building where they do the strength training, where there's treatment rooms, where there's room for people to study, where there's a cook, full-time cook, providing meals for the training after morning session and for lunch. And so everything is arranged. So what's the difference? The difference is scale. The difference is path. And the difference is facilities, infrastructure.
Yossi, you remind me of, if you've ever seen the movie Karate Kid, you remind me of Mr. Miyagi. He's very wise. And you ever seen Karate Kid?
Yes, I have. Sorry. Yeah. Now I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah, you remind me of him a lot. My question to you, it was asked here on the Q&As, but I'm also curious to know this one. Is there a chronic mistake that you've noticed in how clubs train their juniors?
There's never mistakes, because there's always nature resolves that. If you train your kids too hard, they will not perform. The only thing that I would say is, and it's not driven by the clubs, it's driven maybe by parents, that people want to excel, but their primary goal is to excel the short term and make sure that you get recruited for a school in order, so the goal is to be recruited by a school. And I do understand the economic drive of that, but on the longer term, it makes us select those who are biologically ahead of others. So we focus on the people that are ahead of other people, and we don't focus on those who will bring some results on the longer term, maybe not for you as a coach, but for the next coach. So I would say what's not an error, but what's driven by the environment is to focus on the short term. That's one thing. And then the other thing is, if I would look at the amount of training, I don't really think that training is as efficient as it could be. And I don't think that at a junior's level, people should train so much if they really want to improve later on. But I do understand it, because if you don't do that, you lose the competition with other sports that do it. So basically, out of fear, we offer a program that is kind of making sure that somebody has an occupation every day. The parents are happy. Kids are gone for every day. But in the longer term, I would say probably that I understand it from the competition point of view, but then I would try to differentiate a little bit more and do more than just training in the boat. I would incorporate different activities, and not just squat jumps, but maybe anything that teaches somebody more skills than just how to push a foot stretcher. And that would include versatility. It would include flexibility. It would include stuff like that. You get all those rigid rowers that at age 19, 20, 21, 22 start to become injured.
Yeah, no, it's pretty big. There are a lot of rowers who do get injured, and it sucks, because it's like, how are you going to get back on the water? Because the days that you miss can, if you're used to training every day with your team or even alone, and then there's that injury that sets you back and you're not on the water, like that's going to definitely impact your performance. But they do teach you that you got to be appreciative for the days that you have, you know? You have that Athens 2004 poster in the background there. I'm guessing you were there.
Yes, I saw the race.
What were your thoughts on that? Because, I mean, that eight was one of a kind. How do you see the difference between that race compared to what the U.S. is doing right now, the way of the rowing stroke? Do you see any major differences between how that race played out? I mean, obviously, the results were different, right? For the, we can just say this past World Championships.
Yeah, but if you look at Athens, the eight had a pretty good race. They dominated the race, and the Dutch came quite close in the final part. But still, it was for sure. Then, if you look at it, there were no specialized eights in those days. If you look at the Dutch eight, what they had was a quad that didn't qualify, and a four that didn't qualify, and a pair that didn't qualify, and a double that didn't qualify. And because none of those boats qualified, they put the best rowers out of those boats together, and they got a silver medal, which means there was no like a long-term project. Right now, you've got boats like Australia, GB, Germany, who are totally focused on that event as a primary event, which makes competition a little bit harder. If you look at time, so I do think that there might be a little bit gain of speed, but not so much, but boats are a little bit faster. Looking at how people row and what technique they use, I don't think there's much difference, except for the fact that people in general are a little bit better trained. From my perspective, the thing that people should remember is 2004 was 2004. It's a different year. It's not simple to repeat. Actually, it wasn't repeated since 2004 by the US, which means that it's not like there's one recipe how to do it. If you look at international rowing, it's more about looking where your opportunities and your chances are, because we do not have. So first of all, it's no longer possible to jump in the boat in June, do a selection with all kinds of undergrads, and think that you're competitive at the highest level. That does not happen. It's not true. So that's one. So you need more time. Then to get more time, you need to find a way how to keep the people in the system. So now it's more important to find a way how to keep people in the system. And sorry to say it, but 20 years ago is 20 years ago. So that means whatever was valid at that time is not applicable now. The situation is different. It's different for the men, it's different for the women, it's different per event. So year by year by year, you have to look at each event and see where your opportunities are. Last year, our choice was to make our best boat the four. The reason for that was the fact that those four guys were early available. So we could select a four in April and May and go to international competition with that boat. We couldn't do that with an eight, so we selected an eight later, which offered the opportunity for some undergrads or people that were graduating that year to get into that boat, which sets us up now for this year to have everybody involved. But they have to be involved from like now on. I'm pretty sure that we will qualify the eight at the Olympic qualifiers, just because of the fact that we are able to improve the boat. And this time, we do not have to rely on people that are coming in at the latest moment. So from my perspective, 2004 is a different era. 2024, 20 years later, probably competition is a bit stiffer with GB, with Australia. Because you remember in Athens, what was the best boat of GB? It was the boat with Redgrave. It was the four. What was the best boat of the Australians? It was the four. What was the best boat of the Italians? It was the four. So now, in a way, it has shifted. That's one thing. And the other thing is, it is harder and harder and harder for us to compete with the other systems, just because the Brits, they train in Caversham. The Australians, they train one training center. The Australians, they come to Europe for a couple of months, fully funded. We can afford that. The Brits, fully funded at the training center. The Dutch, fully funded at the training center. The Romanians, fully funded at the training center. So we are the amateurs, which doesn't mean that we can't win. So we have to do better in all aspects. We have to make sure that we train clever, although we are not training together. We have to make sure that we bring people together and select the right people, but still find a way to integrate younger talents. We don't have months to look at that. We have to do it in hours, which makes it a different challenge. So I don't know. I wasn't there in 2004. I think it was a great boat, but they had some great athletes in there. 2024, we will have a great boat. We will have some great athletes in there. And what the result will be, well, you can judge me on that afterwards. But I would say, judge me on the total of sweep, the pair, the four, and the eight. How did the eight in Athens do? Do you remember?
Had the eight do in Athens?
Yeah, they won, eh? How did the four do? How did the pair do? How did the quad do? How did the double do? Yeah. It's not just about rowing the eight, eh? So if the memory of people in the U.S. is solely focused on the result of the eight, I would say, well, I can show you the medal of the light women's double, and I can show you the medal of the men's straight four, and I can show you the medal of the eight. They're all the same.
Right.
And so the competition level in some of these events is much higher. How many countries can make an eight? Can you remember how many countries make an eight, made an eight in the last Olympic cycle? Probably somewhere around 10, 11, 12. And most of them are not competitive. So why be so complacent and think that the only way to show that we are the greatest nation of all would be by having a result in the eight? I think it's the only way how to show how big we are is by making sure that we, A, find a structure to bring those people together, and B, excel more than in just one event. Make sure that we are, when we go to LA, are more competitive in 10 out of 14 boat classes instead of 2 out of 14 boat classes.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you on that. There's tons of opportunity to be able to improve. You know, we have last question here to round this out. I can't thank you enough for being here. Any coxswains out there who are striving to be on the national team and trying to find opportunity, what would you have to say to those athletes that are trying to make a name for themselves?
When we talk about coxswain, so first of all, for this year's selection and those who would be invited, we changed the procedure. What I did is everybody who showed their interest seriously and was involved within the program over the last couple of years had the opportunity to be interviewed by a member of the Athletes Council and write their letter of why this should be it. And then the athletes themselves, the 48 and the pair, will show their preferences. So for the men, there are six, and for the women, there are six coxswains that are currently being interviewed. So, which brings me to, so how can you show your, how can you become a partner in this? How can you be considered? Well, make sure that you get your experience. Make sure that you are in the coxswain seat every day. And then once you think that you might have the level, try to get involved in under 19, under 23 program, and try to get involved with one of the clubs in order that you can continue to have your impact and get your experience as a coxswain. Because everybody who wrote a letter to me, I answered. Everybody who wanted to be considered for this Olympic cycle got attention and got considered. Obviously, I'm not going to speak to 100 coxswains every year, but I do think that it's important to reach out to the coaches that are involved in the under 19 and under 23 pathway programs in order to get noticed. That's my advice. By the way, just to give you an indication about Athens, eh? So the men's double was sixth, which was great because it was the best result for a men's double for a long time. And since then, we haven't had a result like that. But actually, those were the only two male crews in the finals, for the open weights at least. The rest was not in the A final. So if you look at it, was Athens such a huge success? Just a question. So getting one medal, is that, if it's a gold, does that make up for everything? I don't think so. But that's just my opinion. I'm a stupid Dutchman.
You're not stupid. You're not stupid at all. But I think for a lot of Americans, we're trying to see how fast an eight can go. And we want to see that to be, you know, turned to hardware to bring back home. And I think that's a little bit of, you know, remember that it's, you know, there's other boats there that are also trying to do the same exact thing, which is bring back hardware and, you know, implement that we can do it. So everybody, Yosi, last name.
Verdonk Scott.
Verdonk Scott, appreciate you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Can't thank you enough. Hopefully we'll have you back on in the future. Any last words of advice for anyone out there?
Have fun.
Have fun. Amen.